The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
2 weeks out to the US election and Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump remain neck and neck in the polls. Candidates are expected to focus on the seven key swing states in the last days of campaigning and especially on religious voters. Joining us now is Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with the Journal.ie. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, I'll just play this little clip to give us a flavour of Donald Trump and what he believes.
And my faith took on new meaning on July 13th in Butler, Pennsylvania. And I would like to think that God saved me for a purpose, and that's to make our country greater than ever before.
So there you are. God saved Donald Trump for a purpose while killing an innocent bystander in the process. I mean, it's bizarre.
Yeah, and I think what's even more bizarre at one level is Trump trying to sell himself as a man of faith when transparently he is not in any way. If you look at his behavior for many years, he is not somebody whose Christianity is at the heart of his being. It's simply not true. That having been said, he obviously commands deep, deep support from religious voters across the spectrum, from evangelical Christians to practicing Catholics, because primarily of his move to have Roe versus Wade overturned. And they are firmly in his corner. And I would say that category of Catholics, they're going to be very, very important in the state of Pennsylvania. And I think that's why he's making so much hay of Kamala Harris skipping the annual Al Smith dinner, a tribute to that Democratic Catholic presidential candidate, which is a longstanding tradition and almost never boycotted by either party's presidential candidate. And also Republicans are making a big play on Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer's video, a bizarre thing, deeply offensive to me as a practicing Catholic anyway, in which she took a Dorito as if it were the Eucharist. I think those things Republicans are banking that they can help move the dial, not just in the presidential race, it should be said, but in close senatorial races in places like Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Now, the question of the polls, and the polls got it wrong, of course, before about Trump, and they were characterized as people who favored Trump but were almost ashamed to admit it in public to the pollsters or indeed to any television interviewer who might approach them with a microphone. However, I would suggest that since 2016, that Trump voters have been so emboldened, they're no longer ashamed of their man.
I think there's an element to that, Pat, of course, of his diehard supporters who wear it on their T-shirts, literally. But I also think there's another bigger category of Trump voters. And those are people like such as comfortable suburbanites who don't like to talk about it at dinner parties. But for them, especially from a tax point of view, having Donald Trump in the White House is much more beneficial for their own self-interest than having a Democrat of any variety. And these people aren't inclined to talk about that at cocktail parties or when they're mingling professionally, et cetera. But Trump's bet is that there are enough of them that when they get into the ballot box, that they will tick the box for him. And the fact is that the polls have typically underestimated Trump's level of support. And that's what the Trump team, that's the spin they are putting on the polling data, is that even if they're marginally behind, that's actually a good thing because the shy Trump voter, in their view, will put them over the top.
Now, you can't say that 50% of the American people are absolutely stupid and unsophisticated because they're not. But you'd expect those people you talk about, the educated Republicans, when they're sitting around the dinner table, they would be talking about more than just, I'd be better off in terms of my tax return. You'd be expecting to look at the Trump tariffs that he's proposing to introduce and what that would do to the cost of living in America. You'd expect them to look at maybe a more global view of what would happen to oil prices and so on under a Trump presidency. America is energy independent, but it is a global market in energy. So if it goes up all around the world, it goes up in America, too.
Yeah, no doubt there are some like that. No doubt that Harris will peel some of them off. And I think that's one of the reasons why she's putting Liz Cheney and Dick Cheney out there so prominently on her side to try to move that demographic. My sense is that she will move some of them, but not all of them. I mean, look, a lot of Americans, and again, this is a fundamental difference between the United States and Europe, is that people are self-interested. It's not so much as a society as it is here. There's a different conception of that. And that's what voting patterns bear out. I mean, a lot of Americans are ruthlessly transactional about this. And when Trump puts the question to them, you know, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And for a majority of Americans, the answer to that question is no. And they hold, rightly or wrongly, the Biden-Harris administration responsible for that. That's his strongest closing argument. On the other hand, look, I think Democrats are going to, you know, make the pitch that, look, we cannot have this guy untethered in the White House again, surrounded by sycophants, et cetera. It's going to come down, Pat, in my estimation, to which of those two arguments is stronger in the closing days.
Now, he does seem to be unleashed. I mean, his story about Arnold Palmer and what happened in the locker room when he went in for a shower. His daughter, Arnold Palmer's daughter, has called the comments by Trump disrespectful, inappropriate and unacceptable. So he does all this kind of thing and everyone is saying, oh, Trump gets a pass because he's Trump. Well, there's got to become a point where ordinary, decent people are saying, sorry, you've gone far enough, mate. Enough is enough.
Yeah, one would think that. And look, we know Donald Trump. We know his character, or should I say, lack thereof. We know he is repulsive in many ways. He is not somebody suited to for any elected office, never mind the presidency. But, Pat, we live in the world as it is, not the world as we wish it were. And the fact is that Donald Trump commands a huge amount of support from the American people. And, you know, there is this allegation out there that, look, Trump, you know, Trump is being normalized by the media, by pundits, et cetera. I don't think so. I think Trump has been normalized by the 75 million plus Americans who voted for him last time, because no matter what, no matter what he says or does, they still want him to be president of the United States. And there'll be a similar number who vote that way this time around. Again, whether we like it or not, looking in, that is the fact of the matter. That is the state of play. And the problem from the Democrats' point of view is that Harris's momentum has stalled. She isn't wearing well as the campaign has gone on. For an awful lot of Democrats were nervous of this. In my view, if there was a competitive process, she would not have won.
Is that not the wisdom of hindsight? Because she did get huge support at the beginning. There was a real momentum because people said about Joe Biden that he was definitely going to lose the election. Kamala Harris was the quick switch, and she did with her convention speech and so on. And the debate with Donald Trump, she was riding on a wave of momentum. So it's all very well to say at this remove, she's not a great candidate, but she did have a groundswell of Democratic support at the very beginning.
I think much of that was down to Joe Biden stepping aside. Democrats were so forlorn that they were facing into what could have been an electoral college landslide, that they were delighted to have somebody new on the stage. And of course, for all sorts of expedient reasons, Harris was the one that they settled on very, very quickly. Now, look, she could still pull this thing off, but you have to ask the question, why is it, you know, again, all the stuff that Trump has said and done and continues to say and do, that people just aren't rallying to her, that the momentum has waned. And it comes down to the concerns that Democrats have had about Harris for a long time. She just doesn't seem to be able to close the deal. And that's why, for instance, you have people like Barack Obama going out there barnstorming the country and indeed having sidebar conversations with, as he put it, the brothers, because they are not as enamored of her as they were of him. And indeed, substantial numbers of them are talking about actually voting for Donald Trump. She's in difficulty. Look, she could still win this thing. It's on a knife edge. But Democrats certainly didn't expect to be in this place a month ago.
Now, the Democrats didn't expect to be competitive at all when Joe Biden was the candidate. So they're in a slightly better place, I suppose, than they imagined they might be come November. But the ridiculous American system whereby the popular vote does not prevail. Instead, you have this ancient electoral college system to give the states some sort of a say where they might otherwise be irrelevant. It makes for a really unfair election process.
Well, Pat, you know, this would go, this conversation would go a whole different direction. But I happen to think the Electoral College system, while not perfect, is probably the best way of selecting a president of the United States.
How so? That the majority does not prevail. In a classic democracy, you know, if you win it, you win it. Even by one vote or by a thousand votes, you win it. In this way, you don't.
I'll tell you why, Pat. Because the United States is far more akin to the European Union than it is to any one single member state of the European Union. As such, and I say this to Irish people all the time, I don't think you'd like it if the European Union operated on a raw majoritarian basis. That was never the point of the United States. We are 50 states. We are arguably 50 countries. The cultural differences that divide us around the United States are absolutely massive, to the point that I would have more in common with someone growing up in Ireland than I would have in common with somebody from Idaho.
But don't
it's
you
a totally
have
different scale.
The checks and balances of Congress, where you've got representatives who are proportional to the numbers of their population, be in the House of Representatives. In the Senate, you've got two each for each state, irrespective of their size. So you do have checks and balances already in the houses, but why shouldn't the person be president who is literally the choice of the people?
Because the president has to be the president of all 50 of those states, not just the places where massive population centers are based. If we got rid of the Electoral College, which isn't going to happen, by the way, this is an entirely hypothetical debate, but if we got rid of the Electoral College, you'd have California, Texas, New York, and Florida is where these elections would be fought and where the votes would come from. If we went to a raw popular vote system, we would see alienation from so-called flyover states that would be so, so deep if all of a sudden they had no say, their concerns were being paid, no heed to, that it would not be long before. You talk about division now. It would not long before we started talking about secession movements in those states, albeit they futile.
Now, the election, therefore, is going to be decided by the swing states. And all the pollsters seem to be saying it's neck and neck, whether Trump has a lead of a couple in Arizona or Harris has a lead of one or two or whatever in Pennsylvania. They're saying statistically, when you look at the margin of error, it's 50-50. But it's winner-take-all in how many of those states?
It's winner-take-all in 48 out of the 50 states and indeed in all seven of the key battleground states. And here's where, Pat, Democrats arguably have the advantage. If we're in very, very close races on two fronts. One, they have a vastly superior get-out-the-vote mechanism to Republicans, and we're seeing some of that, at least, being borne out in early voting. The second thing is that Harris has a capacity to grow the electorate that Donald Trump simply does not. Harris excites, again, young people. The question is, will young people, you know, with the help of surrogates from the worlds of pop culture or politics, will they convince enough young people to get out and vote? If young people get out in numbers and do cast ballots, that bodes very well for Harris, because these races, as you say, are on a knife edge. And indeed, a few thousand votes from those aged between 18 and 25 could make the difference.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating couple of weeks in the run-up to polling day. And as you pointed out already, people are voting in early voting. So it's going to maybe straws in the wind, which will perhaps influence the turnout on the day when people observe those straws in the wind. But it's a fascinating system. Anyway, Larry, thank you very much for joining us. Larry Donnelly, who is law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with the journal .ie.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.